Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for coming to this last of our Lenten series. So I want to be last, so I didn't have to go right after Father Pierre. Failure. In our relationship with Jesus, presentation tonight. As it appears, is described in the 21st chapter of John's Gospel. And here we will have an encounter with the risen Christ, which we're all very familiar with, where the Lord asks him three times, "Do you love me?" And we know the whole sequence. We'll be doing a lot more of that a little bit later. But I want to imagine Peter looking back to the moment of his call, to the moments of certainty and exaltation, and to the moments of doubt, and the moments of utter devastation. In order to understand the post-resurrection encounter between Peter and Jesus, we need first to understand the history of what it was that passed between them. I'd like to tell a story looking back in Peter's own words, as interpreted through me. So I'm going to be doing an extended role play in which I am going to play the part of Peter. I'm going to give him a decidedly contemporary voice, perhaps to help us understand in our own experiences some of the things that he may have been going through in his relationship with Jesus, and help us also to examine our own relationships with Jesus. So, largely, this is going to be based in the sequence of events that unfolds in John's Gospel. But have you ever done a study of the four Gospels, the three Synoptic Gospels, which are based on each other, and then John, which is its own thing, you realize that a lot of the stories that we hear of the events in Jesus' life, some of them are in one Gospel, not another, some are in three of them, but not the third one, the fourth one. So, like a good Irish storyteller, I sometimes needed to incorporate a little bit of Matthew so I could say what I wanted to say. So I'm going to get a little bit of Matthew's stories in there. I've also been very inspired by a book which I think many of you have read because it seems to be all of us, James Martin's Jesus the Pilgrimage. And I'm particularly inspired by Father Martin's use of that Ignatian tradition of imaginative prayer, in which we place ourselves in the Gospel story, we place ourselves in the person of the characters and so forth, as we seek to develop our own relationship with Jesus. As we listen to Peter's story, I invite you to think also of your own story. When have you felt the call of Jesus in your life? When we talk about vocations in a Catholic context, sometimes we think of it in a much too narrow way, which would say that I've got a vocation and you don't. But each one of us is called. Each one of us, by our baptism, is a disciple of Jesus Christ. And the Lord calls us not once, but continues to call us if we only have the ears to listen to his voice. So as you look back on your life, when have you sensed God's presence comforting you in difficult times? What are the grace moments where special people came into your life and changed your life? I'm going to say, to tell Peter's story with a technique that is surely not historical, because we, more than likely, Peter was illiterate. But because I can't remember the whole text of what I want to say about looking at it, I'm going to pretend that Peter is looking in his spiritual journal, just like the ones that I write on retreat. And he's going to be looking back at these incidents, trying to make sense of where he is, post-resurrection, but before he has had his personal encounter with Jesus, looking back on those moments. Simon, that's my name. Actually, lately, it's been Simon Peter. Jesus gave me that name. What do I do? I'm a fisherman. At least I was. place, but it's beautiful because it's home, right there on the Sea of Galilee. I say that I used to be a fisherman because 3 years ago, everything changed in my life when I met the one called Jesus. Right now, I'm back there at the Sea of Galilee, where it all began. But my heart is very troubled. A lot has passed between me and Jesus in these years. Times of extraordinary joy and exaltation. Times of deep pain and confusion. Times of utter devastation. And it's that feeling that I'm left with as I look out on this beautiful Sea of Galilee. But I want to tell you a little bit about the story of how I got to where I am now. And it all comes back to another day, about 3 days, 3 years ago. When I was there on the side of the Sea of Galilee doing what my brother Andrew and I and our other partners do best, we were casting our nets and hauling in fish. And then Andrew, who had been a disciple of John the Baptist, Andrew said, "We found the Messiah." I said, "I'm busy loading fish here. What the heck are you talking about? Found the Messiah." Then Jesus approached me and said, "Come, follow me." I couldn't resist. There was something about his countenance, something about the way that he looked at me, that I knew. I found the Holy One. I wasn't sure exactly what that meant. But I didn't know if I had to leave everything to follow him. So I put my net aside, and my life has never been the same since. Now, it was really quite a head trip, being in Jesus' posse. I mean, I was number two man in the Jesus organization. And it was really quite a problem. I mean, we went to a wedding and they ran out of wine. Talk about a disaster. Not for Jesus. He took those big stone jars of water, waved his hand over it, and the next thing we were drinking the best wine you ever had in your life. I felt like a rock star because I was close to him. Don't get the wrong idea about Jesus. He was no whip. We were down in Jerusalem. We walked into the temple in the outer courtyard where they were selling various kinds of animals. The money changers were working their trade. He went in and turned over all the tables and said, "Stop making my father's house a place of sin. You made it a den of thieves. This is my father's house." I thought, wow, we're going to get in trouble for this one. Pharisees and scribes started looking askance. Jesus never seemed to care what other people thought. He always talked about only doing what he heard his father say. Now, it was of our Jewish tradition to refer to God as our Father. But Jesus talked about the Father in a different way. Like he really knew him. He really heard him. And he only wanted to do the Father's will. Jesus continually surprised us by the things. things he did. We're passing through Samaria, and some of the other disciples and I went to get something to eat. We leave him for 10 minutes, and where is he at the well talking to a woman? Imagine talking to a woman. And not only talking to a woman, but talking to a Samaritan woman. We Jews don't do that. But again, never seems much to care about what people thought or what social convention dictated. He seemed to be breaking down all kinds of barriers. I didn't always understand him, but I loved him and wanted to follow him. Then there were the humans. We were in Capernaum back in my hometown when he healed the royal official's son. And here we didn't even have to lay hands on him. He wasn't even there. Just by his word was so powerful that the boy was healed. At the pool of Bethesda, he healed a man on the Sabbath. He said, "Pick up your mat and walk." Pharisees didn't like that. They said, "This man is a sinner. You can't be doing things like that on the Sabbath." But again, he told us he didn't want to abolish the law but was coming to fulfill it. What he meant by that was certainly beyond me at the time. And the really great event. Though again, we played big venues, the Jesus band and I. And one of our biggest, I looked out at the crowd. There had to be 5,000 people out there. Not counting women and children. I said, "Why are children women counted?" So there must have been the feeding of the 5,000, probably the feeding of 15,000. So Jesus said, he might have made a simple request. "Why don't you go yourself and buy something for the people to eat?" We look at him like, "Are you crazy? We could work the rest of our lives. We never have enough money to buy food for half of these people." And then this little kid, probably 9-year-old boy, came up to my brother Kevin. He said, "Sir, please bring this to Jesus. I have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. That'll about it." And I'm like, "What are we talking about, kid? We've got serious adult business to do here. You're talking about giving me 5 loaves of bread." But he insisted. So he brought to Jesus and said, "Jesus, I know that this really, doesn't make any difference. This kid gave us 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, and Jesus didn't say anything to us." He took the bread, blessed it, and broke it. Next thing I knew, all 5,000 or 15,000, as I'm reinterpreting it now, including women and children, were fed. We had 12 big baskets of food left over. What Jesus could do was truly amazing. He was trying to tell us something else there. It wasn't just about bread. He said, "I am the bread of life. One who comes to me will never hunger. One who believes in me will never thirst." But then he said some things that were turning a lot of people off. "Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no life in you." And people were saying, "Enough." And they left. So Jesus said to us, to the 12, "How about you? Are you going to leave me now?" That's when it struck me deep in my heart. Just what Jesus meant to you. meet him and lead my own life. I said, Lord, whom shall we go? You have the words of everlasting life. And I come to believe and to know that you're the Christ, the one who has come into the world. I knew Jesus was who he said he was. And that's what makes what would happen later. I'm there. In the meantime, Jesus continued to surprise us. Now, here was a clear case of someone violating the law. The woman is caught in the very act of adultery. Lord, read the law. It's clear. She needs to be stoned. Everyone was ready to pick out the stones. They were justified, weren't they? That's what the law says. He said something that just astounded everyone. Let the one who comes in be the first to cast a stone. And they all drop the stones. One by one. Until all of their accusers were gone. Jesus had a way of reaching out to those others who didn't think were important. And always had a way bring them to God. Things were starting to get more honest as time went on. We no longer have the adoring crowds around us all the time. More people were becoming aware of Jesus. And we, as his followers, were becoming more suspect. And they really started to get nervous around us with the raising of Lazarus. Now, it was a dramatic thing. No doubt about that. Lazarus coming out of the tomb. I mean, this was big stuff. My God was dead. 4 days stinking dead. In the tomb. And Jesus raised him. That was something that definitely caught the attention of all the world. Not a good thing. From that moment forward, they were determined to arrest him. They were in the garden. Beautiful garden of Gethsemane where we had spent so much time together. We were there in prayer. Actually, we were mostly sleeping. Jesus was praying. But I woke up. Who did I see leading the patrol as snake juice? If I could have cut his hair off right then, I would have. I was so filled with rage. How would he betray our Lord? How would he betray the one we had given our lives to? I didn't do anything to Judas, but I took out my aggression, I cut it off the ear of the high priest's slave. Jesus looked at me. I I had just told Jesus, even if I have to die for you, I would never deny you. Remember what I said, Lord, to whom shall I go? You have the words of everlasting life, and I have come to believe and to know that you are Christ, the Son of the living God. I knew, deep in my heart, who Jesus was. How could I ever deny him? I went into the high priest's courtyard. And someone asked me, aren't you one of his disciples? Surely we saw you with him in the garden. No, I don't know what you're talking about. Then one of the guards, but you're a Galilean. I can tell by your accent. I said, I don't know him. And then finding the servant of the high priest. She was a cousin of one of the heroes. She had definitely seen me. There was no doubt. I saw you with my own eyes. You're one of his followers. I don't know him! And then the rooster began to crow. And I remember what he told me. Before the rooster crows, three times, you will deny me. At that point, my stomach was in such a knot, as though someone had kicked me there. I couldn't breathe. My cries was like having no more tears. Denying Jesus was like denying my very self. All that meant anything to me. And how would I ever go on from here? And then it continued. They stripped him. Beat him and tortured him and crucified him. I was alone, deep in my guilt. The only ones there apart from me, his mother, Maggie, that's what I call Mary Magdalene. Maggie and Clovis, the women, and John, he was always a favorite, the beloved disciple. He was there. I was nowhere to be found. Not only did I have to deal with the guilt, having denied what I loved. Now or never, you will be able to tell them just how sorry I was. He was gone. On the third day, Maggie came to us, said that she had been at the tomb. And the Lord wasn't there, an angel had told her that he had risen. I went running, huffing and puffing. I was a little out of shape. It was the last one to arrive. I peered in, and I saw the wrappings on the ground. Jesus then did appear to us as a group twice, once with Thomas and once without, wishing us peace. But he never looked at me, and I never looked at him. And here I am, back at the Sea of Galilee, and I decided to go fishing. So my friends and I got on the boat, we cast our nets, we weren't catching anything, and then a stranger on the shore yelled out to us and said, "Children, have you caught nothing?" And we said, "No, nothing." And he said, "Cast your net over the right side." And I thought, I've heard this voice before. And of course, we had more fish than we could possibly carry. We knew he was the Lord. We shared a meal with him. That gesture of reconciliation meant a lot to me. But I still hadn't had face to face with Jesus since I had denied even knowing who he was. But he pulled me aside. He said, Son John, do you love me?" The guilt I was feeling at that moment was unbearable. When I choked it up, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Feed my sheep." And he asked me again. "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Eat my lambs." The third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Eat my sheep." Now, it's often said that I was angry at what the Lord, that the Lord asked me a third time if I loved him. What was really going on in my mind? I was thinking, "Yes, I love you, but can you love me? After what I did. After what a fool I was. After what a betrayer I was, can you love me?" Jesus didn't have to say a word. But I knew that look of pure love, pure compassion, he loved me. Forgave me, and that I could begin anew. Now I understood something more about what his resurrection meant. Not just that he had risen from the dead, or that we would have eternal life, but that even in this life, there's nothing that can separate us from his love. That his healing lands could always restore us to life. Peter would never again doubt Jesus' love for him. They had been through the difficult dynamics of a true relationship. In any relationship, both parties can waver from being fully committed to being disengaged. Our relationship with Jesus is a true relationship with one major difference. Jesus never wavers in his love for us. As I mentioned earlier, Peter is a comforting figure. And after I've just gone through this little exercise, how did he get an ST period in front of his name? And who told him to pose for a statue? And yet, that is who the Lord called. Just what he called Christ. We see a difference, because when Jesus looks at Peter, he doesn't see his flaws, but rather the beautiful person God created and whom he loved. And that is how Jesus looks upon you and me. We see a different Peter in the Acts of the Apostles. Bold, fearlessly proclaiming Jesus as Messiah. Still a piece of work. You know, I meant to say earlier, this was actually an insight that James Martin quoted in his book. You know, we hear about Jesus naming him Peter, Cephas in their native Aramaic, and Petros in Greek, meaning rock. So we associate it with his, you know, love. Jesus' words to Peter, that upon the rock of your faith you have built my church, the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. But some scholars have speculated that it actually might have something to do with the fact that had a testadura. It was a little hard-headed. It was a little thick. And slow to understand. I like that example. Peter in the Acts of the Apostles is still hard-headed and stubborn, arguing with Paul over whether or not the Gentiles needed to observe Jewish dietary laws. And God had come to him in a dream to get him back on track. But this is how God used him, just as he was. And that is how God uses you and me, just as we are. Pope Francis is perhaps the most quotable pontiff in not only in living memory, but in any memory, because he never stops giving interviews to the press. He never stops, you know, saying what's on his mind, and I think he's actually a lot like the original Peter. But in that interview with Civitas Cattolica, translated and reprinted in America magazine during the first year of his pontificate, the reporter asked him, you know, Holy Father, how would you describe yourself? And Francis answered, I am a sinner whom the Lord has looked upon. We see the great things that Francis has done, as well as his quirkiness, just like the original Peter. And you know, this is God calls us with all of our quirkiness. I can certainly relate to this as the basis of my life as a priest and a pastor. I am not a priest because I am better than you, and certainly not because I am holier than you. It's by God's grace that I've been called to this ministry. You know, I was looking back at my own call. Excuse me, I told this story recently. When I was about 5 years old in church with my mother, and she pointed out to the altar servers, boys in those days, and said, Jamie, you want to do that when you get older? I said, no. I said, I want to be the big guy who gives you something to eat. So, those were the prophetic words spoken on Jimmy Lawson, page 5. I did, at the time I experienced my call. You know, I remember interviewing at St. John's Seminary, and Father Tom Daly, God rest his soul, was the rector at that time. He was kind of a funny character. He said, Jim, you have a very interesting background. You went to Dartmouth, studied Russian language and literature. Did you realize that not so many Russians need to weigh them? I said, yes, Father, I realize that. God calls in mysterious ways. But in understanding my call, I understood very specifically as a minister of the healing sacraments of Eucharist and reconciliation. And what I thought about as I was preparing this talk was that loving the glance that Jesus cast on Peter. When Peter was feeling such guilt and shame and devastation, and how Jesus' glance transformed him and made him new. And that's what the power of God can do in our lives. You know, in talking about, you know, God calling us as we are, I have my dearly deceased beloved uncle who was a Jesuit. And don't get the wrong idea, but not a Jesuit like who was an academic who taught at BC or at Georgetown. My uncle was a very unconventional person who lived in his van. He ministered to the poorest of the poor on Indian reservations in the inner city, and he never kept a thing that anybody gave him. And I thought, this is the kind of priest that I should be. That must be the holy way. I don't have to be a Franciscan. Ah, that's not going to work. I'm out of nice clothes. I collect antiques. That's who God calls. God knows who I am. Law is law. And God calls you and me as we are. Let's reflect for just a moment on that line that Jesus said after. Peter said, yes, I love the Lord. Heed my sheep. You know, it's clearly the role of a pastor to be a sheep. It's the image of a little bit jarring. I don't mean to call him a sheep. But I think actually, maybe it would be a little bit more palatable if we realize that all of us can be in various roles. Sometimes we're the sheep, and sometimes we're the shepherd. Because all of us, as baptized people, as disciples of Jesus Christ, are called to bring that healing presence, that good news to others. And many times I'm the recipient of that, as well as being the shepherd. And your shepherd, too. Because you bring that good news of your life in the context of people you encounter in your life. And that's what we are all called to do by our baptism. Peter remains my absolute favorite figure in the gospel. Because he's so unique, so flawed, and yet he's so loved. And God called him exactly as he is. As God calls you exactly as you are, and me as exactly who I am. If we would all be faithful to exactly who God made us to be, and can grow into that, I'll end then with that favorite quote of mine from St. Catherine of Siena. Be the person God called you to be. Set the world.